This morning we're going to be learning. We thank Naomi and Aryeh Davis for sponsoring this Shir L'Ilui Nishmas Dov Ben Yosef by Dov Kamenetsky, whose yahrzeit is today. Our limud should be a zechus for his neshama. Aryeh was here a second ago. And okay, we're going to start in the meantime. Our limud should be a zechus for his neshama. We also are learning. Just mentioned Rav Dov Ben Yosef, who we are learning for this morning. We're also just thinking of our friend Eliezer Cohen, who is usually here, who has unfortunately had a little bit of a fall, and we're going to be learning the Refuah Shlema of Avraham Eliezer, our friend Eliezer Cohen, should have a Refuah Shlema Bakarov. This Ikar, up till now we've spent a lot of time dealing with theory. This Ikar over here is one of the Ikarim which actually is very practical and affects us in many, many ways. And in fact, up till now we haven't met so much opposition. Meaning when we learn about the Ikarim and how God operates and what God does in the world and things like that, today the people that we're dealing with are not arguing about those things. Meaning, in the times of the Rambam, when you're dealing with Aristotelian issues and Greek philosophers, and these are real problems, then you had, some people, there were challenges on these issues. But up till this point today, the real issue, one of the real issues that we run up against today, is the contention that surrounds this Ikar. So we have a lot of work to do, and in fact, I spend so much. There's so much to discuss, to learn about this, that I ask you that we're actually going to divide this into two parts because there's just so much. There's a semester's worth of study, and what we're going to do is we're going to do one segment today about Torah Ben Hashemayim, and then we're going to move into transmission next week because transmission is an integral part of what we're covering. But it's just too much to deal with altogether. So let's start at the very beginning. The Rambam is unequivocal. The Rambam is clear as to what's going on over here. Let's start with the Amin Imamin, and then we'll come back to the Rambam himself. So the Amin Imamin says, this is the eighth foundation of faith. Ani Imamin be'emunah shlema, believe with a perfect faith. Shekol ha-Torah ha-metzuya ata bi'odeinu, hi ha-nesuna le-Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha-shalom. That the Torah that we have today in our hands is the self-same Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu of blessed memory. And the way we sing it in Yigdal is, Toras emes nosan la'amokel al yad nevi'o ne'eman be'isai. So that there was the true Torah was given to the nation of God through his prophet, who is Moshe Rabbeinu. Which, by the way, of course, links us naturally to last week. Meaning it's necessary to understand the unique pedestal of Moshe Rabbeinu in order to appreciate what he gave. But this is a unique Ikar in the sense that I could always believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is unique, but I may also believe that, he also had some personal agendas in writing the Torah. So this is very important to appreciate separately as an Ikar. This over here, again, is going to be a place where you read an article in the paper. You read a Dvar Torah, which somebody sends you in your inbox. This is where this is where Ikarim meets, the rabbi meets the tarmac. In terms of Ikarim today, there are many problems in this foundation of faith that we experience on a weekly basis. That people are slightly, subtly off, and it's a very thin line to cross, and it's a very dangerous line to cross when it comes to this Ikar. So let's explore it a little further. The Rambam tells us the following when explaining this. Yeah, what was that? Good. So how far does this extend? So Toby's asking a fabulous question. How much is this? What part is the Rambam referring to over here that is untouchable transmission from Sinai? So let's take a look and see if we can work backwards with your question in mind, because this is a very important question. So the Rambam says the following. We're not going to read the whole of his Pirush HaMishnayos, but this is where he says it originally. So it's worth starting here. He says, Vayasod HaShmini, the eighth foundation of faith, Hu Torah Min HaShemayim, is the fact that the Torah comes from heaven. It's not a book, it wasn't authored, it wasn't somebody who had a great idea, it wasn't somebody who felt that he wanted to create a religion or a cult, it is from heaven. Okay, so this is how it begins, and this is how it works. So how does this work? So the Rambam says, V'hu shenamin shekol haTorah zu We believe that when we open up the ark, and when somebody lifts up the Torah and says the Zohar Torah, we mean those words. The Zohar Torah, Asher Nasa, right? We are saying that this Torah, the Torah we're looking at, is the self same Torah that was given at Sinai. That we say that every day when we see the Torah. This is what it means, says the Rambam. We have to believe that every aspect of it. Now, Kulamar Shegiak Olav Kulam Eis Hashem Hagor Shekorim Lo Oisal Derech Ha'Ashala Dibur, and it was conveyed via what we call the transmission of speech. We don't fully understand how that transmission occurred to Moshe, but it did. Moshe Rabbeinu somehow they had this communion with God. He, in a certain sense, had dictated through him the Torah, which is what occurred on Sinai, and he came down and he gave it to us. So this is what occurs. The Rambam goes so far as to say, we're not going to do the... Oh yeah, let's take the next line just to see how far this does go. Ve'ein hevdel, says the Rambam, there is no difference. Bein ubenei cham kush umitzrayim uput ukanan. There is no difference in the pasuk which describes the genealogy of Cham, which to us should be a really irrelevant detail, so to speak, right? Meaning, you know, that doesn't seem to us as, you know, very important in the greatest scheme of things. Says around that pasuk is equally as important, v'shemishto meitavel bas matreid, or describing the genealogy of, let's say, Esav's descendants. Oy anochi Hashem, or the first pasuk of the Aseres Adibros. Or Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, the fundamental expression of faith, says the Rambam. Every letter, every pasuk in the Torah is of equal value. You can't distinguish. Hakol mipi agvura, everything came from Hashem. Hakol Torah Hashem Tmima Tahora Kedushas Emes. Kedusha Emes. Everything is pure and holy. And the Rambam really goes to lengths to describe this. He just to get a sense of how far this goes. The Rambam says, I just want to jump a few lines. Here we go. It says, I'm going to start just about eight lines in. The last one on the line is Kula. So he says, just four words before that, he says, Omer, Shekol HaTorah Kula Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chutz Mipasuk Echad, Sheloi Amru HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elo Moshe, Mipi Atzmoi, Vezeo Ki Devar Hashem Baza. A person who would say, you know what, I agree that 99.7% of the Torah is divine, but... you know, this is that one little area that wasn't, says the Rambam. That person is already called a person who despises God. Every letter has wisdom in it. And he said, and the Rambam goes on to say, somewhat uncharacteristically, we should pray to God that we should be able to have the wisdom to understand the greatness of that message. Should I pray to Hashem that one should be able to have that ability to be able to appreciate that? That's what the Rambam says. So, and he says you should pray to Hashem, Elokei Yisrael. This is the Rambam concludes in his Ikar. Now, you can see the Rambam is very clear about this. Unequivocal. Every letter, every ois, every pasuk is from Hashem. So now, the question that we need to contend with ourselves over here is the following. How did Israel know? How do we know that's true? So where did this begin from? Where does this come from? And in order to understand this question, we need to ask that question to two different audiences. Audience number one is us today. Audience number two is the people of Israel at the time then. Okay, so meaning, how did Israel then know that this is true? And how do we today know this is true? Two separate questions, but very important to be able to appreciate this. So let's start then. How did Israel know that when Moshe Rabbeinu presents them with the Torah, every letter, every word, every pasuk is from divinely given? Yes. What was that? Okay. So very fascinating. So what we have over here is the possibility that we know, as we say daily, that everybody believed in Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did they believe in Moshe Rabbeinu? Well, it's actually interesting enough, the Torah talks about two episodes where they believe in Moshe. One is when he originally proclaims himself the Redeemer. He arrives in Egypt at the end of Parshas Shmos, and everybody believes in him. But then it got a little difficult, right? Because then the work got a little more difficult, and everything wasn't going in the right way as redemption should go. And then at the end of the whole process, when there's the sea splitting, the Egyptians dying, everything, we sing the song, and we believe in Hashem and Moses' servant. So what you're saying is because Moshe Rabbeinu has displayed his credits in a most public forum, in a most incontrovertible way, so then you should say, or well, anything he says should go, right? Okay, so now, yes. Okay. So we have to think about this very carefully. So maybe it's Sinai. Is it the miracles? Is it Sinai? What allowed them to know that every letter that was expressed is from Moshe Rabbeinu? So this is the way the Rambam says, and this is something so important. This halacha that we're about to learn in the Rambam is something which changes the way we view the Torah altogether. This is so integral to our appreciation of our Judaism. Listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah. Remember the Rambam in his book, his halachic work called the Yad. The Yad is his 14 books. So he divides all of Judaism into 14 sections. He has one about called Sefer HaMada, and in it is talks about Yisod HaTorah. These are the bases of the Torah. Many of the Koran that we're learning are to be found in here in a more expressed way. So here he says the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Hilchos Yisod HaTorah Perikhes. Moshe Rabbeinu lo ha'eminu bo Yisrael mibnei ha'osa she'osa. He says, we don't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because that he did great oisos. He did great tricks or wonders. She'amamin al pi ha'osos. Yesh b'libo doifi she'efshu she'yase ois b'lat v'kishuv. Because as long as Moshe Rabbeinu is performing great tricks, then at the end of the day, you know what? We can still say, you know, there was the smoke and mirrors and, you know, he might have just been harnessing dark forces or whatever else it is that there were at the time. So you know what? That's why he could do what he did. You know, he was very good with water, right? So he could do the Yamsuf, whatever else it is. Says the Rambam, you'll notice every miracle Moshe Rabbeinu did was for a need, to address a need. Moshe Rabbeinu never one day got up and said, folks, I want you to believe in me, so look what I'm going to do today. Look at the rabbit I'm going to pull out of the hat this morning. That's that Moshe Rabbeinu never did that. He says, they're running from the Egyptians. That's why he split the sea and drowned them. We needed food, so he brought down the manna. They grew thirsty. He split the stone open for water. There was a rebellion in the ranks. They thought that he wasn't the leader. What does he do? He splits the earth, they fall in. So every miracle did was for necessity. Every other sign that Moshe Rabbeinu did. What do they believe in because of? At Sinai. Why? Now why is Sinai so important? I mean, wasn't it a bigger light and show, light show? So he says, no, it was categorically different. We ourselves, the entire nation, 600,000 men, 3.2 million arguably people, were standing at the foot of Sinai. We saw what was going on. We saw the miraculous experience. V'negash el ha'rafel, Moshe entered the dark clouds. V'akol medaber elov, v'anu shomim Moshe, Moshe. We ourselves heard Moshe beckoned into that cloud. We heard God speaking to him. We heard God saying to Moshe, tell them this. We heard Hashem speaking to him face to face. As we know, it wasn't just with our fathers, with us. How do you know this is the only reason why we believe in Moshe's nevuah? The Torah tells us explicitly, why am I doing Har Sinai? Not to convey to you information, not to give you Aseres HaDibros, not that you should have a system of law. Why? For one reason, that the people will see that I spoke to you and they'll believe in you forever. Meaning, who's the you? Moshe Rabbeinu. Up till now, they believed in him, but they didn't believe in him in a incontrovertible, impervious way of belief that'll last forever. People could still think about it. Yeah. Now, just to appreciate this fully, when you go into the Midrashic literature and the Rambam talks about this, remember what happens. Let's just describe the system of events over here. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up. He enters into Har Sinai. Then Hashem expresses, not only do they hear Hashem calling, but they also hear Hashem who starts saying the Aseres Dibros. There's two deos in Chazal. Whether it was that Hashem expressed the first two of the Dibros, which include all the rest of the Torah, the Mitzvos Aseh and the Mitzvos Lo Aseh, which is belief in God and the belief of nothing else, which encompass all other positive and negative commandments, or it's all 10 of the Aseres Dibros which are expressed. And what happens? People got afraid is the euphemistic way of saying it. Is Yotzah Nishmasa means to say that they became disembodied. Meaning to say the experience of the divine was so powerful, was so out of this worldly, that they could no longer exist as composite beings, as a physical and spiritual being in one place. They separated. God resuscitated them, and they said, thank you, Hashem, but we can't do this. We can't have this experience. We can't be killed every moment we have experience from you. Please speak to Moshe, and Moshe will carry on from us. That moment was critical. Why? Because it was us who said to Hashem that we entrust you to speak to Moshe, and everything he says afterwards we know is from you. Why? Because we just experienced it. That's the reason why we believe in it. Therefore, he says, anybody who comes afterwards and says, well, look what I can do. Look at the rabbit I can pull out of this hat. And now that I pulled the rabbit out of the hat, let me tell you one or two things about the Torah. You know, it's not really important, this and this detail. Says the Rambam, why do you not believe such a person? Why do you not believe in Navi Sheker, who can do wonderful tricks? Why don't you believe him if he's very powerful and he's got great predictions? Because
he's not speaking in the name of God.
Because we ourselves witnessed the truth. And therefore it's like saying to you that what happened to you yesterday isn't true. I don't need to now sit down and logically prove it. It's because I experienced what the truth is. So Moshe Rabbeinu said in that corpus of literature, he said that you don't believe people who disagree with anything in this Torah. That's part of what he said, which we believe. So if the Rambam says, it's like telling you that your history isn't true. What you experience isn't true because we experienced it. That's the way Rambam describes it. You know, it reminds me of the story about, there was a particular town in Eastern Europe, and there was a rav of the town, and he was very well loved by everybody in the town, and at a certain point he passes away, and the question is, what's going to be with continuity now? So naturally he has an older son, and the older son takes office. But the problem is that, you know, he didn't have just one son, he had a few sons. So the next week, after the shiva is finished, the younger son comes in and he summons all the elders of the city and he says he has a very important announcement for them. So they said, so everybody comes in, it must be very important to the Rav's son, you know. So he calls everybody in and he said, I have to tell you something. He said, I didn't know if I should tell this to you, but for the last three nights in a row, my father came to me in a dream and he said that I should be the Rav of the city. So you know, everybody very, very much revered the Rav of the city. And they said, everybody's sitting there nodding, saying, you know, if the Rav appeared, you know, the Rav must obviously want this. You know, that even though the Bukhar, you know, and so on, but, you know, we have to respect what the Rav says. And there's one gentleman in the back of the shul, I mean, Rav Yaakov Weinberg told the story. And he says in his very precise way, there's one old man in the back of the shul, and he's shaking his head, and he says, If the rabbi wanted you to be the rabbi, he should have come to us in a dream. That's what's happening over here. Right? That's what's happening over here, says the Rambam. It's not like suddenly, you know, Muhammad wakes up one morning, you know, and comes back and says, God spoke to me. Paul says, I was walking along the road and suddenly I have this and this is what I came with, you know. And suddenly I have, you know, the Mormon tablets and everything. No. That was one individual who now suddenly comes and reports the whole experience. That wasn't what happened with Judaism. In Judaism, we experienced it. We couldn't experience it further, so we gave it back to the prophet, and that's why we believe the prophet, because of us, not because of him. That's a very important fundamental over here, which now opens the gate for being able to believe in the Torah. This Rambam is so fundamental. That's why, by the way, I think that the Haftorah on both Parshas Yisro and Shavuos is, what's the Haftorah? The Haftorah on both Yisro and Shavuos is Ma'aseh Merkabah, that of Yecheskel and Yeshayahu. Perek Aleph and Yecheskel, Perek Vav and Yeshayahu. Why? The reason is because Har Sinai, Matan Torah, wasn't just an experience of details, of information. It's like, you know, get the memo. It's like, okay, there's 10 things you got to do, folks. This is very important. An NB, you know, highlighted, emboldened, and they got the email. That wasn't what happened. Har Sinai wasn't about information. Har Sinai was about the experience. Ma'ase Merkava was a human being coming the closest they could to seeing the divine. And that's what Yeshayahu and Yechezkel are describing. That's what Har Sinai was. That's the closest we came to seeing the divine, which enabled us now, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and says, this is what God said, we said, oh, well, of course he said that, because we know about that. That's where we start from. Now, the problem is that it's not as simple. You see, this issue has become an issue which has been under attack, specifically in the last 200 years, vehemently. There's schools of thoughts. There are theses written that attack this from numerous sides. So what we're going to do is we're going to dip a little, into these concepts, into some of the arguments, not to get ourselves too embroiled, but just to appreciate, because the question that we asked B'nai Israel then is different to the question as to ask now, is how do we know? And how do we know is very important. So we're going to start with this, and what we're going to do is the following. You see, it's a little bit of a complex topic. Let's start at the very, very beginning of this. Source 5 for a moment, the Gemara in Baba Basra. Okay, so the Gemara in Baba Basra says a very important statement. It's talking about authorship of the Torah and authorship of all of the Sifrei Nevi'im. So we left out Tibby's question for a moment, but we need to come back to that, which is how much is included in the scope of this. It sounds minimally like the Torah Shebichsav. Remember, Torah Tanakh is divided into three parts, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. It sounds like it's minimally Torah Shebichsav, but there's more than that. So I'm going to put that on hold for a moment. The Gemara tells us the following in authorship, in Source 5. Omar Mar. Yeshua cost of Sifra v'shmoneh psukim shebatara. The Gemara says that Yeshua wrote his book, which is Sefer Yeshua, and the 8 psukim in the Torah. So Tanya, Commander Omar, shmoneh psukim shebatara Yeshua cost on. This goes like the opinion in the Brisa, which says that Yeshua wrote the last 8 psukim from Vayomas Moshe Ever Hashem. Ev Shem Moshe cost of Vayomas Shem Moshe. The Gemara says, is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu writes that Moshe died? If he died, he can't be writing it. Right, says the Gemara. Elo ad kan kosav Moshe, mikan ve'ela kosav Yoshua de Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda would say that Yoshua wrote from the Psukim onwards, from where Moshe Rabbeinu died. How many Psukim does that leave? There's 8 last Psukim in the Torah, which describe Moshe Rabbeinu's death. Va'amri la, Rabbi Nechemia, some say it was Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Shimon, efshosh sefer Torah kosav ois achas. Rabbi Shimon says, can you have a Torah which is missing one letter? Uksiv lakoyach esever Torah azeh. The Torah was complete. Elo adkan kos HaKadosh Baruch Hu oimer u'moshe oimer v'koysev. Mikan v'elach HaKadosh Baruch Hu hu oimer u'moshe koysev b'dema. So from what happened was the whole Torah was dictated directly from God. The last 8 psukim were dictated and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it b'dema, which literally is translated to mean in tears. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu knew, this is where the sort of the fringe between Bechira and Yediyah really comes together. When Moshe Rabbeinu is experiencing Yediyah over his Bechira and he's crying because his human, he as a human now is sublimated to the divine decree of his own death. Right? This is what's happening as he's writing this. What you see over here is that there's a debate as to the authorship of the last 8 psukim in the Torah, right, essentially. Right? Now the Rambam is making it very clear that any letter, any pasuk, which is not written by Moshe Rabbeinu, that's already beyond the pale. That's you've crossed the line. So what do you do with this Gemara over here? This is part of the difficulty. It seems like there was a track in the Tanaim who believed that. Now this is not an open gate. This is not like a floodgate where anything comes through. But it sounds like at least specifically the last 8 psukim. Yes.
We're talking about authorship or transcription.
Meaning.
What? The author was the Ribbono Shel Olam, the transcriber was Moshe, and the last 8 psukim transcriber was Yehoshua.
You're right, but the problem is that Yehoshua is a regular Navi. I mean to say, in the end of the day, what we're believing over here is that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Av Sheba Nevi'im, was the one who gave the entire Torah, which means to say that it was clean of any bias. So what essentially is being said over here is that because it was impossible for the last 8 psukim to be written by Moshe Rabbeinu logically, then if Yeshua is part of it, Yeshua doesn't have the same level as Nevuah. So, meaning, how could the Rambam say that there's the entire Torah? That's the question which is asked. You had a thought? Hillel, you didn't. Okay. So this is where the questions begin. And this kind of this over here, it sounds like there was a track, which, by the way, it almost sounds like it was closed off. This notion of the last episode, because it doesn't come into mainstream rabbinic literature there afterwards. But you do find murmurings. Here's a few murmurings that you find later on. You see, because a lot of the biblical academic research starts internally. And it says, well, let's look at our tradition and see how many people really accepted this. So if you dig around, and you dig deep and dig far, you can find here and there people who seem to be in disagreement. Okay, this is what happens. And I'll tell you the reason why this is important to study this a little bit. You know, when I went to YU, YU has a vast range of professors and teachers. And I went to YU at last minute, I did a switch and I came into YU. And by the time I came in, you have to do Bible study of Talmud. And there's a course called Intro to Bible. Intro to Bible is basically getting a sense of the Bible. Now, happens to be that when you come in and you switch in, within a week to go, there's a reason why there's certain Bible classes which are open and certain Bible classes are not open. Okay, so now, I happened to get into one that was open, and there's a reason why it was open. Not everybody who teaches is under the jurisdiction of Das Torah, who are guided necessarily by Torah principles. There's a lot of academics, and this is not to say that most kids going to YU know where to go and where not to go, and who to go to and who not to go to. But I had the fortune, I'm not going to say good or bad, to go into this into a particular course. And I spent an entire semester subject to a lot of the questions which are raised. And it was tame in terms of compared to some of the very strong academic bents. But at the same time, it was disturbing. And so what I did was I spent my entire semester, after every lesson, I went to Rav Twersky, Rabbi Rapp, people in the Beis Medrash who I had a relationship with, and I asked them about some of the things I was hearing, because some of the things you hear are really disturbing. And we went through piece by piece, letter by letter, pasuk by pasuk, all the questions, because you have to understand, a lot of these academic, we'll call it palaces, are built on like very little things here and there, which kind of are meant to make a whole edifice, when it's not really mainstream thought, but nonetheless, it's presented as if this is it. And there's nothing else. And it's very difficult to deal with that if you're a young person who's just been exposed to this after a number of years in yeshiva without any tools to deal with this. So I had a wonderful experience in the sense that I was able to actually discuss this with people who know about this. And it happened to be the next semester, there was a young man. Somebody said, do you have time to tutor? I didn't. But I said, let me, there was a guy from Chicago, young boy who had just come to YU. He needed help in Bible. And he said he was going to the same Bible class. He had the same problem as me. And I said, for sure, no problem. And I started working with him. He needed help because it's a complicated course. It's not a simple course. There's a lot of information, a lot of reading. It's very complex. But at the same time, I felt that it was important to have a word with him. And I sat with him weekly. And he was going through the same issues, but he didn't have anybody to turn to. He didn't have as much of a background in yeshiva. He didn't have a connection to people to ask. And he was really floundering in faith because of some of the things that he was experiencing. And he didn't know how to respond. You know, it's like an onslaught of academia in these issues. What do you do? So slowly but surely, we went through things. And I explained each part of it. I said the parts that I still don't understand. And I went through and little bit by little bit. And in the end, he went back to Chicago, very lovely person. He sent me, at the end of the semester, he sent me this note, this most beautiful, beautiful note about the impact that I'd had having this relationship with him, because this is such a sensitive topic. And what ends up happening is that people get misfed information that will pull them off the rails because it's only presented in a particular way, only one side, with very, very specific extreme shittos which are expressed. Which is why I think it's very important to know about this, so that when we see it, whether subtly or expressly, we understand what's going on. It's important to be aware of these things and how to respond to these things as well. We don't have enough time to do a semester's worth of work right now, unfortunately, but just some highlights as to appreciating this internally and externally. Happens to be many years later, I met him in Chicago. Wonderful person. He was just getting married that year. He was completely happy. It was a wonderful experience. But nonetheless, we are also subject to what we read in the newspapers, the academic research which is done, which crosses the line of this ikar, and that's why it's important to understand. He has an example which is often thrown out. The Ibn Ezra. This, for anybody who's done a little bit of Tanakh, this is a very difficult issue. So let's skip around to source 8 for a second. Pasuk says in Parshas Lech Lecha, Vayavor Avram Ba'aretz, Ad Mekom Shechem Ad Elon Moreh, Ba'knani Oz Ba'aretz. So Avram, he was still Avram at this time, was going through the land, and he goes to the land of Shechem. This is after Lech Lecha. He's going through the place of Shechem, and the Canaanite Oz Ba'aretz. And the Canaanite then lived in the land. Now, let's do a little bit of reasoning for a moment. At the time that the Torah was given, right, so let's say the Torah was given at the very end of Arvos Moav, before they entered the land of Israel, were the Canaanites in the land? The answer is,
yes.
Absolutely. They hadn't been conquered until the times of Yeshua. Which means to say that if the Torah is telling us the Canaanites were then in the land, that would maybe imply, and I'm being maybe because, again, there's lots of ways of reading this, if you read the Rashi, the Ramban, Svarna, there's lots of explanations of this pasuk, but nonetheless, in the end of the day, it sounds like that the Torah is given, the Canaanites are no longer in the land, which is why it says, Akanani, Oz Ba'aretz, right? But Moshe Rabbeinu, who's writing it the whole life of Moshe Rabbeinu till the very end of his life, the Canaanites were still in the land. So who's writing this pasuk? Right? You see the question? Now, again, it's just like, read all the Mepharshim and they deal with it. They really do. The Ramban, everybody deals with this. It's not like this is somebody just invented a new question over here. But nonetheless, if you sort through all the Mepharshim, you're going to find the Ibn Ezra as well. The Ibn Ezra says the following. He says, in source 9, Vaknani Oz Ba'aretz, Yitachen is possible she'eretz Kanan, tofso Kanan miyad acher. Okay. Says, V'imei nenu kein, yesh boi soid, yesh loy soid v'amaskil yidom. He gives a regular interpretation about a change of power earlier on. And then he says, if not, it's got a secret, a soid v'amaskil yidom. And a person who understands it should keep quiet. Okay, so, which is why, by the way, when you hear people who offer explanations which are definite and absolute in the Ibn Ezra, as if they know 100% what the Ibn Ezra is saying, one has to be careful, because if they really understood, then they shouldn't be talking about it, right? So anyway, so this is what the Ibn Ezra says. So what does Ibn Ezra mean? It's got a so this pasuk has got a secret, and a person who knows it should keep quiet. What is he referring to? So it happens to be that Ibn Ezra references himself elsewhere. If you go later on into Sefer Devarim, at the beginning of Devarim, we're going to read this in a week and a half, that in 2 weeks' time, that says, Be'evar Yardain, Bamidbar Bar Rava, he says, V'im Tov Insod, says the Ibn Ezra. If you understand the secret, which is Hashnei Masar, the secret of the 12, says the Ibn Ezra. If you understand the secret of the 12, Gam Vayichtov Moshe, Vaknani Oz Ba'aretz, that's our pasuk, Bahar Hashem Yero'er, V'nei Arso Eres Barzel, these are all psukim. Takira emes. You understand the truth. If you know the soid of the 12, then you understand all these cases. Right? This is Ibn Ezra. What's the secret of the 12? So you go to the end of the Torah, last perek in Dvarim, where it talks about how Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die. In source 11, it says Vayal Moshe lefi dati, says the Ibn Ezra, according to my understanding, ki mizeh pasuk kos of Yehoshua, ki echa she'ala Moshe lo kos of derech nevuah kosvay. That from this point onwards, from the first pasuk in the last parak of the Torah was where? Not Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, but Yahushua wrote it, because it talks about Moshe Rabbeinu ascending to Har Nevoah. If he's going up to Har Nevoah, he can't be writing, even though he dies just a few pasukim later. So says Ibn Ezra, he this is where Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Now, what Ibn Ezra is essentially doing is he's extending that opinion in the Gemara about the last 8 pasukim, and he's extending it earlier to the beginning of the parak when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up. How many pasukim in that parak? 12. So what people say, what the argument is, and by the way, not just people, many academics, but what even in fringe elements of Judaism in trying to understand this Ibn Ezra, so for as an example, Rav Yosef Tuvelin in Sofnas Panach, who's one of the Rishonim, when interpreting this Ibn Ezra, says that in fact what the Ibn Ezra is saying over here is that there is a notion that there's certain words in the Torah which maybe were added in after Moshe's death. So Aknani Oz Ba'aretz is somebody who's later on writing and saying, in those days the Canaanites were in the land, meaning Yehoshua's writing it maybe, and saying, then the Canaanites in the land, now they're not, because now talking to the audience now, if you don't have Canaanite, or when it talks about Eres Barzel, the bed of Og, and it's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have seen that, so it must have been somebody else writing it. That's what is argued in this Ibn Ezra. Now that's, you see what's happened over here? Is the Ibn Ezra is sort of, if this is what the Ibn Ezra is saying, what the Ibn Ezra has done is he's taken the license of that Gemara, and he's sort of taken it one incremental step further to certain words which historically he feels don't match. That's what the Ibn Ezra says.
Given license to someone editing it.
What was that?
Yeshua edited the Torah, because that pasuk was
I'm not sure about editing, but adding. Okay, the meaning to say the parts that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have possibly experienced himself is what the Ebenezer says. Now this is a problem. Yes.
Just a question, because the whole parsha is Bilam, the whole parsha is Balak. I mean,
good.
He couldn't.
That's what the Gemara Baba Basra says.
Right.
Moshe calls the Sefer Sefer Bilam. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote the Sefer Bilam because that was the part that he wasn't privy to act experientially. Okay. So now what do you do with this? Good. Good question. So actually, in fact, if you've got the Mefarshim, the real Mefarsh Apshat will say Arayam Azeh in the, certainly in Tanakh, show you that it was a later author and so on. Does that mean to say the whole book was authored later on? Like, say, Yoshua, for instance, there's many Arayam Azehs. So the Radak, the Abarbanel, there's a lot of discussion over there. So maybe Yoshua wrote his book, but Shmuel added in Arayam Azehs there's a lot of discussion about this in the Mefarsh Apshat. This Ibn Ezra, what do you do with this? So it happens to be that's not the only way to read in the Ibn Ezra. If you read the Makor HaChayim, Rav Shmuel Asfardi, he writes on the Ibn Ezra, he has a pirush called Makor HaChayim on the Ibn Ezra, on the next source in 13. He says, no. He says, Im Tov Insod, HaShnei Masor, he says, Hinei Sod HaShnei Masor Heim, Shnei Masor Psukim, Shnei Psukim Vayal Moshe Ad Sof HaSefer. He says, V'yesh Orim Ki Dato Shal Chochom Ki Min Vayal Moshe V'yoshua Kosav Kasher Omar HaChochom B'parsha Zuzay Zabrochom B'posav Vayal Moshe. He says, some people interpret that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write it. Aval Be'emes, Ki Chochom Zal Einoi Sofer Gzeh, the Ibn Ezra does not hold this, Rak Kol Eile Ne'emru L'moshe B'derech Nevuah U'V'Kosom Kach. So the Makor HaChaim says, the Ibn Ezra doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that somebody else wrote it. It means that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote these parts not experientially, but rather prophetically. Because in the end of the day, was Moshe Rabbeinu around in the times of Bereshit in the first place? The answer is no. So he was being dictated that from Hashem. So of course he was being dictated what happened then. He can also have dictated what would happen. That's not a problem. So that's what the Ibn Ezra means over here. So the Makor HaChaim. So it's not even agreed to. Just so you should realize, people like Spinoza, Benedict Spinoza, so use this as one of the proofs that the Torah isn't God given, because in the end of the day you have a few cracks here and there, which is what is suggested. How do you reconcile? Let's say, for instance, Rav Yosef Tuvelin and Sofnas Paneach. How do you consolidate that with mainstream thought? The answer is that first of all, he himself answers. He says, if it's a section of Torah which is not a full section and it's not referring to anything which refers to halacha, maybe it's all right. I suffice to say that this is not mainstream Judaism. And in fact, the reason why you have to go searching in the Tofnas Panach, which is a sefer you probably never heard of, you probably thought it was the Rogosh of a Gaon. The reason why you have to go there is because it is a fringe element which fell out of usage or out of general faith. Which is a very important point over here. You see, there are a lot of people today who will say, wait a second, Ibn Ezra, that gives me license to start saying, anytime I see something which doesn't make sense in my logic, I'm going to now say that, I got it. It's the same idea. We have to be very careful. The Ibn Ezra over here was saying something, which first of all, he, being the Ibn Ezra, was saying, but in mainstream Jewish thought, left that behind when speaking about these kind of things. Mainstream Judaism actually left behind these elements. And that's why when the Rambam says this is our Yosod Emunah, he means to say unilaterally that is what has become accepted. Which is a very interesting notion, which we don't have time to express now, but it's the idea is there such a thing as psak in machshava? Can you say that there becomes a one way of looking at something philosophically and there's no other alternatives, even though there were alternatives earlier? It seems to be in one of these things, certainly in this area, that Ibn Ezra became sidelined in many, many ways. Here's another just example of why we should be very careful before jumping into conclusions. Take a look at Ibn Ezra at the end of Parshas Vayishlach. This is why one should also just be very, very careful. Ibn Ezra says at the end of Parshas Vayishlach. Here's another one of these psukim, which if you're working in a very linear, chronological way, then there seems to be a bit of a problem. He says the following. These are the kings who ruled in Edom before there was a king in Israel. Now, let's do a quick chronological test. Were there any kings in Israel before, till the point that Moshe Rabbeinu died? Answer is, nisht. There were not. Right, so who's writing this pasuk? So once again, it's not a problem to say Moshe Rabbeinu has been having a nevuah. But the Ibn Ezra quotes a person called Yitzchaki. The Ibn Ezra has a bunch of people he quotes to throw out. He has a person called the Meshuggah. He quotes 200 times around Tanakh. Very interesting people that Ibn Ezra interacts with. Here's one of the people he quotes. He says the following. He says, this is written as Nevuah, meaning, even though it sounds like it's a later apostle, what does Ibn Ezra say himself? It was a prophecy about something later. So first of all, let's just, take a deep breath in and appreciate that Ibn Ezra understood that there is a notion you can write about future things. Good. Then Ibn Ezra says the following. There's a person called Yitzchaki, he wrote in his book, this is not Rashi, that this was written much later in the days of Yehoshaphat, later kings. Right, because then they had the experience of knowing that they were kings. So they added this in later on. He says, "Upiru shadoras keretzona," and therefore he explained he explained it from a, we'll call it an anachronistic perspective. There's this last section of Vayishlach. Hachi korach shmo Yitzchak. He says, and that's why his name is Yitzchak. Why? Kol hashomer Yitzchak glad, because everyone's going to laugh at him. He says, "Ki omar ki hadad hu hadad ha'adomi v'amak kimatavel achos his panches." V'chalila chalila shadovar kamoi shadiber al yemei Yehoshavat. Says Ibn Ezra. Chas v'shalom, you should say that a section of the Torah comes from a later time. He says, v'sifroi roli l'yisarif. Translate that for me. V'sifroi roli l'yisarif. What does Ibn Ezra say? Burn his books. Okay? You understand? So now you have to think carefully. So Ibn Ezra has got the soid, v'shamaskel yidom. Right? And everybody's jumping on the bandwagon and saying, "Wait, look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra. He's our man. Look what he does. He opens up the gateway to academia." The answer is, just be very careful. You've got to read the whole Ibn Ezra. Right, he's talking about book burning over here when people say these kind of things. So you have to see everything in a greater context of you when you understand the Ibn Ezra. Nonetheless, it is also important to remember that the Ibn Ezra, of course, is not mainstream thought, even if there are murmurings or echoes of what this could be over here. This is a very important thing. If it's all right, I just want to get a little bit of traction. The reason why this is important is, just so you should appreciate, we don't have a great amount of time. I'm going to just go a few minutes over just to close this point in form us. Just so you should appreciate, in more recent times, you know, in the 70s there was a manuscript which was found, there was a Rav in Switzerland who was looking at a manuscript which was he found attributed to the son of Yehuda Chassid. Rav Yehuda Chassid was one of the Rishonim, one of the people who led a group up to Israel, and Rav Yehuda Chassid has his son transcribed talks on the parasha of his father, Rav Yehuda Chassid, and the Rav spent many, many years researching this, and he was going to print this manuscript. And he showed it to somebody else, and a certain Rav in Bnei Brak, and the Rav in Bnei Brak looked and he said, "It's not possible. This must be a forgery." He says, "Why? How do you know?" He says, "Because some of the things he says in there contravene this principle." So he says, "But I believe that this really is an authentic manuscript. I believe this is really the son of Yehuda Chassid." So he went on to go to the publishing house, and he wanted to go and publish it. And Rav Moshe Feinstein was sent a letter from a Rav in Schweiz in Switzerland, who is asking him, "What can we do now?" He's putting to print this book, which has got concepts which are directly against mainstream Judaism, that the Torah is written min hashamayim. So Rav Moshe responds, this is, if I'm not mistaken, 1976, he says the following, "Bedavar," in source 16, he says, "Bedavar pirush haTorah b'miyuchas Rabbi Yehuda Chassid," is the Chavches Adar Rishon Tashin Lamed Vav, "Malas Kvod Yedidia Rav Goyen Marino Rav Daniel Levi Shlita, Ha'av Beisin Kilas Adas Yishurin V'tzurich." Okay, so he's writing to Zurich. And he says, "Me'achar shekibalti b'dor shel etz shel esmol, I received your letter yesterday, od michtav eich shomar pi misake shel etzias ha-sefer shu al shem Yehuda Chassid." So the person who wants to print it is becoming stubborn. He really wants to print this book. He says, "Kamoy shehu muchrach ani la'ashiv tekev af shelo nekel kol kach mitzad chul shasi." He says, I'm not feeling very strong right now. I need to respond to this. He wrote, received the letter yesterday because I feel this is such an important issue. Hashem yachzikeni, Hashem should strengthen me. He goes on to describe all the issues he finds in the book, all the problems in the book, and he says the following. He says, "Nami Azra." He says, let's not read that section. First, he says, in the top of the next column, the next page, on page 7, he says, "Al koponim, kol ha-sefer Torah kula nichtav al yidei Moshe mipi ha-gvura. Kol ois to ois mamish, every letter was written from Moshe Rabbeinu. Mi she'omer she'iko afilu rak ois achas she'kosav Moshe ba'atzmoi hu koifer b'Torah v'chlal ki davar shem baza." He says, "What is the psak?" This is not the Rambam talking in terms of ikari emuna. This is the Rav Moshe talking in terms of psak halacha. He says every letter was written from Moshe. Kol she'kei mi she'omer she'ikar eiz davar she'af Moshe lo ne'koso el acherim Moshe bo acherim v'echziru ze min haTorah shem koifer b'Torah v'chlal ki davar shem baza. If anybody suggests otherwise, there you have crossed that line. Because Shiavo Ache Echad V'Yomer Shaloi Tzivo Hashem LaChaser or LaHoisef V'Lo Rak Ois Achas Hu Navi Sheker Shemis Osabechenek. It says your false prophet suggesting anything else. Rav Moshe goes on to say, we're not going to read inside just because of time constraints. But Rav Moshe goes on to say, in no soft terms, that it must be that the sefer is a forgery, or at least the part that somebody else who had an agenda was inserting in the words of Yehuda Chassid, because it's not possible that he could say things which suggested there was another author to the Torah, which is what was suggested in Yehuda Chassid. He got he has the following shiva, which is written just afterwards, because what happens is that they apparently the printing house had already printed copies of it. and Rav Eliyashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman had reached the printing house. And Rav Moshe, you can imagine, the Gedolei Hador are trying to reach this printing house. What's going on with the Sefer? You're printing something in the Nehru Yehuda Chassid, which is against Ikari Emunah, which cannot be possibly what he said. Suggestions that Moshe Rabbeinu changed this, changed that, and all kinds of things. And the Rav Moshe goes, does a line-by-line an analysis of the Sefer. And Rav Moshe says that the printing house agreed that they would take out the certain sections and print the rest and said that the original edition was Mezuyah. But Rav Moshe says, in fact, the whole book itself is infiltrated with this, with some agenda. And he goes on to describe these things. The reason why it's important to see is Rav Moshe, and if we had a little more time, we'd see more inside, is to appreciate that Rav Moshe Feinstein is expressing, and this is the person that we turn to when it comes to how we keep Hilchos Shabbos, and how we keep Hilchos Tchumim, and how we keep Hilchos Kashrus. And this is the Posek Ador in this respect. And when he turns around and he says that there's a book over here which is expressing these types of issues, he's saying the Psak Halacha is, the Rambam is Nifsak LaHalacha. You can read as many articles as you want that explain that there's people who disagree. Remember, the people who disagree are the fringe elements in the Rishonim, if they are at all, if that's what they mean. And Moshe says the mainstream has left them behind. The danger of this, I feel, is not so much the fact that this brings questions to our minds, but the fact that we overlook the beauty of the Torah in the defensive stance that we are to always be defending against these types of issues. And this is the last example, just to close with. This example over here is the following. Is while we were busy trying to set up the barriers and push away all those people who tried to explain the Ibn Ezra also, we miss perhaps an opportunity to understand the truth of what's going on over here. And that is the following. I had a question which always bothered me, and I was very blessed to find an answer a number of years later, and that is that there is a notion, a Kabbalistic notion, which is called the Yistakel Bo'araisa, Bo'ra'alma, that God looked to the Torah as the blueprint, and then created the world. And to me it always seemed a little strange, because, you know, the Torah seems to be a very, you know, in a certain way, as a description which is this worldly. You know, it's talking about episodes that happened, laws that pertain to this world. So, you know, what God was reading, you know, the story about Shosh and Nagach HaSapara, and therefore, you know, what does that mean? So it happens to be, if you go to the introduction of the Ramban to Sefer Bereishis, the Ramban talks about this. And he says that the Torah in its primordial state didn't exist as, you know, we pull out of the Aron as we have it here. The Torah exists in its primordial state as conceptual ideas of the Ratzon Hashem, which is expressed in what's called black fire and white fire, two forms of light expressing the Ratzon Hashem. And what happened was is that it was this expression of the infinite was confined to a finite place through letters, which is a very unusual idea, the notion that finite letters can express the infinite. And these letters were arranged it was like a certain code, which was the notion of what the Torah was. The giving of the Torah was when that code, when those ideas, those concepts, we'll call them almost like, you know, the metaphysical equations of reality. You know, like when you have H2SO4, right? So, you know, sulfuric acid, right? So you take an element, you know, two hydrogen particles, atoms, you take, you know, sulfur, and you take four oxygen molecules, you put them together, they form now a unique substance. The Torah is, every letter of the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis are those, we'll call it our table of metaphysical elements, which are being formed together to create the world. How does that occur? So Hashem split it up in a particular way, which expresses Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashamayim Ves Haaretz, which is one format of the expression of those ideas. But you can reconfigure those same ideas into different configurations, which means to say that's why when we read a Torah, as difficult as it is for Bar Mitzvah boys, we don't have the trop in the Torah. We don't have Sof Pasuks in the Torah, because already that is a limitation of the ideas into a particular format, right? The Torah is bigger than that. Even the breakup of the words is an interpretation of the ideas which are expressed behind us, as the Ramban. So says the Vilna Gaon. We go back to that Gemara at the beginning. The Vilna Gaon says the most beautiful thing. What was happening with Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is over here, is at the end of his life. He's writing the Torah. The accepted opinion that we have, La Halacha, is who wrote the last eight psukim? Our general accepted opinion is that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote them bedema. What does bedema mean? Dema doesn't necessarily mean tears. What does a dema mean? Says the Vilna Gaon. Dema means a mix. When it talks about tebel, mixed up grain. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it bedema. What does that mean? That Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the words, but he didn't divide the letters yet. It was the same. He didn't divide them into the words. He wrote the concepts, the ideas, but he couldn't understand them because he didn't have the penetration of dividing the words up till then. Meaning to say that the words weren't changed. The letter, it was only the spacing which maybe was divided later on to explain that it meant this. But nonetheless, it wasn't as an idea. It still existed. It predated. It existed beforehand. The problem is when we learn these, when we learn about these things, and we learn fringe elements, and we build towers on them, sometimes we forget the center. Sometimes we forget that what it really means to learn Torah, what it really means to be learning an idea of God, which is expressed in the most incredible finite way through these letters, through the Torah itself. What we have left to explore is the following: is how do we get from then, from Matan Torah till now? How did that transmission work, and how accurate, how incredibly accurate is that transmission? Because there's a lot of work on this externally and internally. We didn't have a chance to touch on documentary hypothesis today, unfortunately, which is an extension of this line of thought, which is dealt with very, very much reliably internally in our thought, in Jewish thought. We're going to start off a little bit with the documentary hypothesis and some of the questions on the documentary hypothesis, not as a specific arguments, but generally, and then we're going to turn to the idea of when we actually pull out the Sefer Torah, how close is the Torah that we have to the Torah that was actually given to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is a remarkable experiment, a remarkable limud, which is very much worthwhile, because part two, I think, validates this part one, which is where the questions start. Anyways, I want to thank you everybody very much for their coming, and I ask everybody to come back next week so that we can really fully engage in this conversation properly. We can only make a show of the God's work, the cost is all the people are to share my life with the man to play until Torah be adhered.